Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I am Mike Lewis. Joining me is Dre's. The text line is 98973. Feel free to weigh in on whether or not... Actually, feel free to weigh in on the question I am going to ask Dre's right now. Is it possible to use any Native American name or icon as a team name and have it be acceptable, in your opinion?
Yes, okay. I do.
So in what instances would you say?
When I say possible, I mean in the instances where it is completely working with the Native American community, and they are validating or signing off on it, right? So by and large, I think there has to be a consistent effort of you working with them. It's a sensitive way that you're going to have to move, right?
So we're talking about the really dynamite story. I'd suggest you check out the New York Times on this. The story is headlined, Why One Team Named the Indians Won't Be Changing Its Name. And it turns out it's the Spokane, Washington minor league baseball team. It is actually a part of the Cleveland Indians organization. But listen to this. The minor league team in Washington State has been collaborating with the Spokane Tribe of Indians in what it hopes has been a respectful manner honoring the local indigenous population. And in fact, the Spokane Tribe of Indians has endorsed the way the team's effort. In fact, it said, this is from the tribal council, they came and listened to the elders, and that's what really developed the relationship over time, said Carol Evans, chairwoman of the Spokane Tribal Council. It's grown like a family partnership unit where there's a lot of respect for one another. Now, that is not a universally held opinion, certainly not in the Native American community. Let me read you another quote. There is no such thing as a respectable treatment of any mascot or team name that has a Native theme in sports. This is from Sean Harjo. She's an advocate for Native American rights. Quote, there is just no such thing, no matter how you package it. The Cleveland Indians, who were contacted in this story, said that they were having discussions on the best, quote, the best path forward. And the Spokane Indians, who actually have used the Spokane written in Salish on their jerseys as an effort to sort of be to incorporate, have said that they would be willing to abandon the name, but so far the local tribe seems pretty on board with the way the tribe is reaching out and incorporating a lot of the tribe imagery and history in their day-to-day operation, in the team's day-to-day operation.
Yeah, this is really, really, it's interesting because there's almost no way for anything in this country to get 100% yes on, right?
That's exactly just
the fact. We go in too many different directions, but they talked about abandoning the name 14 years ago, right?
And which would put them very early in the process of these sort of things.
They are not being moved by what's happening around us, but to have worked with the community and hear what the community has to say, I came into this going, no. Absolutely not, right? And reading the article made me say, you know what? It could be possible, right? I will say I'm not the authority because I'm not from the community, right? So you would have to talk to someone from their community to really say, does this work? I also see that their mascot used to have a Native figure and they changed it to a trout, right? In their process of working together with the chiefs within this tribe. Also, they added a traditional food on there. So they have the trout, and then they added a feather, that is inspired by the art of a member of the Spokane community. So taking the thought and the care that's gone into changing the mascot, right? We're going to have it be a trout. We're going to have a feather that's drawn by someone from the community, making sure you're paying for the work to get done. All of these things, I think, just go into the intentionality and the openness to still change it, right?
So what are your thoughts on the Florida State University Seminoles?
You know what? I don't know enough about it. I've heard some stuff in the past. I just happen to be my other football team is the Washington football team.
Oh,
right.
Interesting.
So the Seahawks are my first team, but as a kid, I fell in love with John Riggins and Joe Theismann and all those guys and the Washington football team, right?
Right.
But at some point in my journey, I realized, wait a minute. Hold on. No one told me this name is bad, right? And so I'm like, you know, I still love the team, but the name and the owner, I won't get into him. But what about you about the Seminoles, as you were saying?
So it's one of those things where you kind of wait for the – primarily, you can sort of make this larger point that any level if this is interpreted as racist, that it affects all of us, not just the targeted group. Like it makes society less than. However, I usually look to guidance from the affected group. That's where I first go to find out how should I react to this. I think so far the Seminole Nation has been relatively on board, at least the people at the upper end. Now I don't know why that is, and I'm sure that within the nation they are not. It is not universally held, right? We all know that there is not. You can't say this is a Native American opinion any more than you can say this is an American opinion or a Chinese opinion. I mean, there is a variety of opinions about these things.
This is why I always say I'd never have bought into the philosophy that if someone is offended, then you get rid of everything. No, there has to be
credibility.
Has to be credibility to it, and there has to be a certain number. And I'm not here to tell you what the number is, but at the end of the day, if the mass of the community is saying, hey, I have seen articles where down in the Florida area, you have people saying, hey, this is cool. We love the Seminoles. We get behind this team. So I'm with you. The other thing I want to say is it's okay to say I don't know. People actually get angry at you where it's like, you should be educated. You should know everything. Right. No, I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and even if people who you agree with on 9 points out of 10 have a 10th point that you're sort of unsure about, you know, embrace the fact that you're unsure and learn something about it. That's what I do. I mean, I was apologizing to, I don't know who, if it was Aaron Mason or someone else I was working with on one of the shows saying, you know I say I don't know a lot. It's only because I don't know a lot. You know, there really are things that I haven't yet gotten to a point of information where I can make that sort of hot take. You know, it's easy if you're talking about, you know, whether or not the Mariners have won a World Series.
Right.
Pretty easy opinion for us to make. But it gets difficult when you get into more nuanced issues. I mean, the Spokane Indians, for example, they've even named used the Salish language on their bathroom signs. I mean, they've gone through, they feel like, and so I would say that if this level of effort, and let me also separate one thing out.
Let me say this: the level of effort has to be. It has to be the terms of it or the level has to be set by the tribe.
Totally.
Not by the team.
Completely.
Right.
It can't be like the team's made incredible efforts of its own design.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't matter. I completely agree with you. But I would also say, like, there seems to be this separation in calling a team. If you look at sort of the level of the number of stories that have been written nationally, calling a team something broad like the Indians. Or let's just say the Washington team, former name, the Redskins.
Right.
Those tend to get real flashpoints. The specific tribal name mascots seem to get less.
Yeah.
And I've actually literally done web searches on this to find out, well, why is that?
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
Okay?
Because I genuinely don't know. And I'm willing to take someone else's lead on it to see what tell me what at least give me some information so I can arrive at original
Mike,
thought.
You're offensive and you're...
Yeah.
I know, that's what comes next. Listen, all I say to people is there are 30 things I could throw at you right now you would not have an answer for. When I say I don't know, what I really mean is I don't know and I'm going to do my best to go get educated so that I can come back and have a better opinion. And that education for me starts with the person who's being impacted.
That's an absolutely appropriate way to look at it. So while you don't know and I don't know, let's talk about a guy who does know.
Yes.
Or claims he does know.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, he knows.
This would be Alan Lichtman. He may pronounce it Lichtman. Do you know, Jacob, how he pronounces it?
I definitely heard the C sound, the Lichtman.
Lichtman, okay. Alan Lichtman, who is a history professor, has apparently correctly picked the winner of every presidential election since Ronald Reagan won in 1984, using his, and I'm quoting him now, his 13 keys system. It's worth mentioning in 2000, however, he predicted that Al Gore would win the election, and Gore did win the popular vote. He lost based on the Electoral College. So I don't know. So I've got problems with this story. I'm not even going to go farther into talking about him and his predictions.
He's impressive.
Call me unimpressed.
He's impressively unimpressive.
Yeah, he's really unimpressive.
He's done a really good job. But I want to talk about his 13 keys, like economy, incumbency, social unrest going on, scandals. Like, thank you. I did not need you to come up with these 13 points. At the end of the day, I have the exact
same. You kind of knew.
Yeah, I got the same 13 points.
All right. Let's listen for just a sec. Do we have time? Yeah, we do. Yeah, let's listen for a sec for, this is him explaining, correct? These 13 magic keys.
Remember, an answer of true always favors the reelection of the White House party. If six or more of the keys are false, you get a political earthquake.
Okay, number one. The White House party gained House seats between midterm elections.
Republicans lost the U.S. House midterms in 2018, so false.
Number two, there is no primary contest for the White House party.
True.
Number three, the incumbency key. The sitting president is running for re-election.
True.
Four, there's no third-party challenger.
Despite claims by Kanye West to be running, this is a two-party race.
Number five, the short-term economy is strong.
False.
Can I stop for just a minute?
This is awesome. This is awesome. This is awesome. This guy is educating us about nothing. Absolutely nothing. I want to do something, though. Let's have some fun with him.
All right.
One moment. I'm going to shoot a few things at you. You tell me.
True or false?
Impressive. Impressive or unimpressive. So this is what he has predicted since Ronald Reagan. He's gotten them all right. He predicted that George Bush from 89 to 93 would be the president. Were you impressed?
No.
No. Okay. We move on. We are moving to one Bill Clinton, right? I did not have relations with that woman. Okay, so Bill Clinton from 93 to 01. Is that an impressive one?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Okay. Let's move on. Come on. I'm cutting in some slack.
All right.
Are you impressed with the son of George Bush? Like, oh my gosh, this one, he really reached here, right? Didn't he?
I would say, well, so I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack on the first one, the Al Gore one, because Al Gore actually won the popular election. This is also what happened with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Lost by 2 electoral votes. That one, you know, and a Supreme Court decision in Florida, that was one he was actually right on the popular vote, but wrong about the election.
Okay, so now we're getting into the good stuff here, right? We're into the future here. Barack Hussein Obama, are you cutting him some slack for predicting the first black president of the United States of America, yes or no? Impressive or not
so
impressive?
So when did he predict it is the big question.
Now you're talking.
Right, exactly. So if he predicted this in October, no. If he predicted this in January, yeah.
Yeah.
I would have been pretty impressed with that. Yeah. I would be extremely impressed with that. But he didn't. He predicted it later in the year, the way he's doing now with Donald Trump. I mean, if you look back at all of the elections since Reagan, we haven't had blowouts, but we've had ones that tracked along the lines of all the major polls. I kind of feel like, and then the one that he didn't get right, technically, because it was Electoral College win, was the Al Gore George Bush race. He apparently got the Donald Trump. He literally, on the two closest ones, by far closest ones, he's one of two. Now, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good percentage it is in basketball. I would say but it's not so great in predicting elections. I mean, he predicted he had a whole bunch of gimmies, and then he had two tough ones, and he only got one of those right.
Especially, I'm all the more unimpressed considering where we are right now. Right, if he was picking these, as you said earlier, yes, maybe I'm even impressed with one or two. But he's literally picking them. I mean, this is coming out in August, like. Oh, my God, he picked Joe Biden to beat Donald Trump.
All right,
really?
So we both grew up playing pickup basketball. If somebody is hitting 50% on their layups, you know, if they're hitting 50% on the three-point, if they're back there a ways, fair enough. I'm super impressed. But on their layups, I didn't have one basketball coach who would have been thrilled with me missing every other one.
Okay, so give me this one. Is he impressive for the Donald Trump pick?
I would say that he is actually kind of impressive for the Donald Trump pick. I would say but there's about 6 or 7 professors out there who also lay claim to this. Not everyone lays claim all the way back to Reagan. But he wasn't the only person out there predicting it, but he was one of the few. Also, I will give him credit, but I'm not going to allow him to build a career on it.
You just crumbled his claim to fame.
Yes, I'm trying to.
crumbled it
but
up.
But obviously, he's more famous than I am. So I don't know if me shouting at this guy is really going to matter.
I'll say the Barack Obama and the Donald Trump are impressive. I mean, there is something to be said about the first black man. It's something that, whether we like it or not, prior to many all the way up to the moment just would not have believed it to truly be possible. And then Donald Trump.
I completely agree with you on that point.
And then Donald Trump, I believe on election night, he couldn't believe it. The photos of him sitting there, he looked like, oh, no, what did I get myself into?
Well,
you mean I actually have to be president now? Like, he didn't believe it.
He already had apparently a television deal cut. He was ready to go into the next thing and not be president. And the other, at least according to Bob Woodward's book, I think it was Bob Woodward's book, I read a couple of them about the election night, that Melania burst into tears when he was declared the winner. And it wasn't tears of joy. It's like, oh, my life is getting ruined. And I don't imagine that she is happier being first lady than she would have been just, you know, continuing on in New York and doing what she really loved doing.
He was been more hated than he ever has. And whether you like it or not, she does. I don't believe she likes that. She doesn't.
No, I don't think she likes
like
that.
Not only for him or for herself, right?
Or for the kids.
Yeah, for the kids. Anything. It's just kind of like, this is not what I signed up for. You did when you married an egomaniac. And so this guy has found some way to parlay his way into the White House. And
well, you know, but thank God we have people like Alan Lichtman letting us know what's going to happen. Sun's going to rise. Rain's going to fall.
Real quick, is Alan Lichtman more or less impressive than Paul the Octopus, who in 2010 correctly predicted all of the World Cup matches?
I think on land, more impressive. In the water, less so.
I love it.
How's that? Coming up, should we be allowed to drink in public? If you say yes, then maybe you've got a little socialist in you.
We are back. It's the Tom and Curly Show. Holding it down for today. Trey's my man Mike. We're in the building.
We are here.
We're halfway there.
We are here. I've still got to explain the photo I tweeted out of us. Getting a little bit of, I didn't realize what was behind us. You were sitting at John Curley's desk. And, well, I'm not taking down the photo, but I am going to contextualize it.
Okay, please do.
I will.
So funny. So we have this article we're talking about here where they're talking about, really, is there unfinished work to prohibition? Open container laws criminalize working class people, and make public less fun. We need to legalize public drinking. What say you?
You know, I'm actually a little mixed on this, but when I've been in places that legalized it, when I've been in New Orleans, when I've been in Las Vegas, it's not like I see greater problems associated with it. I mean, I know that a lot of the pressure on that, if you're a bar owner or a liquor store owner, the pressure gets actually moved onto you because you're supposed to police your area. And that can create conflict when that's not property you own. And someone has every right to stand out there and you can't really like go out there and pull some bottle that they brought from somebody else.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, but there is one of the best things about this story is a chance to run a cut from the wire. This is something I've been wanting to do since I got here to Cairo 4 years ago. This is actually their speech just about that very thing.
Somewheres back in the dawn of time, this district had itself a civic dilemma. The city council had just passed a law that forbid alcoholic consumption in public places, on the streets and on the corners. But the corner is, and it was, and it always will be, the poor man's lounge. It's where a man wants to be on a hot summer's night. It's cheaper than a bar. Catch a nice breeze, you watch the girls go by. But the law is a law. The Western cops rolling by, what were they going to do? They arrested every dude out there for tipping back a high life. There'd be no other time for any other kind of police work. And if they looked the other way,
They'd open themselves to all kinds of flaunting, all kind of disrespect. Now, this is before my time when it happened, but somewhere back in 50s or 60s, there was a small moment of genius by some nameless smoke hound who comes out to cut rate one day, and on his way to the corner, he slips that just-bought pint of elderberry into a paper bag. A great moment of civic compromise. That small, wrinkled-ass paper bag allowed the corner boys to have their drink in peace, and it gave us permission to go and do police work.
I love that.
That was awesome.
I love that. And that's exactly, and he's exact. I mean, this is a fictional show, but he's historically right. That is exactly what the whole paper bag thing was about. It was so police could just say, look, all right, you got it under control. I don't need to roust you on this idea. They still would, of course.
Yeah.
But it gave them, and so there was this idea that, yeah, people are going to sit outside. They're going to sit on their stoop. They're going to sit on a planter somewhere, and they're going to have a drink. This story that we have here, a really great story that Jacob found, is about this idea of whether or not those laws, the public drinking laws, which are tied to prohibition.
Yeah.
Prohibition lasted only about 3 years, really about five or six until it was finally repealed. The idea was that, all right, well, we'll give up the public drinking aspect of it as a compromise to get prohibition repealed. But then now we're dealing with the outcome of that, and we're getting people who are picked up for, not for public intoxication, which is still going to be, it's actually just having an open container in public. I mean, is that something we should change?
I'm sorry. I have to go all the way back to say, I love that monologue. That was amazing.
It's an amazing monologue.
Oh, what an amazing monologue. Great writing. And I'm going to walk my way towards you and meet you. As you started talking really about the whole, as we call it, brown bag sipping, right? Like
when I was
a kid, that was like my uncles and those guys, like they were the coolest guys on the, you know what I mean? Like it was like, he called it the poor man's lounge. I'm like, they were the coolest guys on the poor man's lounge. And they were out there, they had their brown bag sipping, they had their shags, little bell bottoms, man. But they were, you know, they were cool. Right. And you're right. It was not much going on, but high fives, sitting down, talking.
Right.
They're talking about the Sonics, Gus Williams, and
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Course,
Fred Brown and all that other stuff. So it was a great, as they called it, a civic compromise. And I wish we had more of that happening today.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, it was a civic compromise handled at the appropriate level.
Yeah.
Right? It didn't go through city council to have a variety of amendments on what size paper bag and where you source the paper bag. And does the paper bag have to be carbon neutral?
Yeah.
Or does the paper bag have to be, like, recyclable or reusable?
Yeah.
You know, or compostable? It was just a paper bag. And it was sort of this detente, this truce.
Well, welcome
to. We don't want to enforce it.
Yeah.
And you don't want us to bother you.
Yes.
So what can we do?
Well, welcome to being progressive, right?
Right.
Being progressive.
That's progressive.
Yeah. But what we call progressive is what you just described nicely, right? Getting into everything, including the paper bag. And did we recycle? And where did they get? Oh, my head almost exploded. But it makes me ask a question of you. Is there unfinished work of prohibition? Right. Like, is it something where here we are 87 years later? Right. And we're going, do we still need to push the envelope a little further? Do we need to get to the point where someone can open carry without a brown bag?
We have this. We have. Well, even when I was young, and I don't know if this is still true, but in Texas, for example, you could have, you could be drinking a beer and driving. You could not be drunk driving. So I guess if you drive long distances and drink very slowly, you could stay under that 0.08 percentage. However,
I think that's a little far for me.
Well, I hear you on that.
Okay.
I mean, but states have managed it in different ways. I mean, the whole reason we have a universal over 21 drinking law is because the feds didn't want to come in and mandate the age to the states. What they did want to do was mandate that everyone's 21. You don't have to go to 21, but we're removing all of your highway funds. And that's when every state converted to being over 21. are we sort of picking at this idea when we can send someone to war at 18, but they can't buy a beer at 18? Are we picking at an idea when somebody, if I were sitting in a public park with a can of beer and I'm not drunk and I'm just enjoying myself, that somebody could come up and either write me up with a misdemeanor ticket or pour it out or approach me in a manner, a police could approach me in a manner that then suddenly it starts escalating into something different. Like, are we mismanaging that? Well, I think there's any question we're mismanaging that.
Yeah, you know what? This is fun. Now that you're making me rethink everything, I think we're doing kind of what Jenny Durkin and these guys are talking about, right? Like, we're stepping back. We're reimagining
public drinking.
Right, let's reimagine this, right? And so, what say you about 18-year-old drinking? Are you in or are you not?
I'm in.
You're in.
I mean, or 21 years old, you know, before everything. You're not allowed in the military. I mean, if we're going to decide that 18 is an adult, then you have all the responsibilities and liabilities and benefits therein.
I'm going to take you to the hood real quick. So we have this saying out on the poor man's lounge, right, that we say keep that same energy, right? And that's what you're saying. You're saying let's keep that same energy. If we're going to be consistent, right, if you're going to do it over here, you have to do it over here.
Yep.
Great point. I'm with you. We're going to 18. Let's push it, man. Get Jenny on the line. Let's get the council on the line. I know they don't talk, but we can be the go-between.
My guess is there's plenty of officers who listen to this show, listen to Cairo Radio.
Yeah.
We're already hatching that civic deal. So I tell you, 18-year-olds, don't worry about it.
We've got the civic agreement now going on. And I'll tell you this, by law, I mean, since we're passing laws here, by law, I'm thinking brown bags make you legal, period. Yeah. Doesn't matter what time it is. You got a brown bag around that thing, you are 100% good.
Well, joking aside, it really is warrants a rethink. Here's a good example. Right now, based on the new restrictions on drinking, bars and restaurants have to stop serving at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And what you watch happen, and trust me, any of you can try this little experiment. Watch what happens when the bar, disgorges all the people, and there's obviously not many people because of 6-foot spacing and restrictions on, and all of that I agree with. They walk straight to whatever. They walk to the Bartels. They walk to the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up a 12-pack, or if it's a big group of them, maybe more than that, and then they head to the nearest park. Nice. Now, that same distancing isn't happening. All of the stuff that was actually in control in the bar is no longer in control because not everyone stopped selling booze at 10. Just one category does. Again, what you were saying about that consistency across the board, we look at booze in this very odd way, and we generally tend to mismanage it. That's the one consistency that we have, is that we mismanage it virtually all of the time.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing. Like you said, I think if bars have to do it, you're right. The same should be consistent of stores. Everything should be on the exact same concept, the exact same timeline. If it's 10, it's 10, but it should be straight across the board. And I am for people being able to drink in public. Oddly enough, I've been to Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
I've been to Vegas. I like both.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
All right, then. All right, well, hey.
Matter of fact.
We've reformed all of it right here.
I'm for drinking at work, too. So on that case, no.
All right, coming up, rising star, a Washington rising star who has decided to leave Congress is now on his way, maybe on his way to the state house. But why did he decide to leave Congress? More on that.
I'm drunk. You're drunk. Everybody's drunk.
Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Mike Lewis Drays. So we were going to talk about Denny Heck and why he's leaving Congress to become at least the Democratic Party nominee lieutenant governor, but I want to talk about something else.
Yeah, why not?
So before the show started today, I tweeted out something about the last day of the takeover, the Occupy the Tom and Curly Show movement, and I do a selfie with Drays and myself. Put it out on Twitter, and what I didn't notice, because Drays was sitting at John's desk, John Curley's desk.
And that's blasphemy already.
Right.
Right.
And then we didn't notice that behind us, as I'm taking this picture, there's a big Trump for president sticker, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we take the picture, and then you noticed it right away that like there's, and I was like, that was gonna big deal,
right?
Wow. On your social media in particular.
Yeah, like, it just got moving, man. We put it up and people.
And technically everyone, it just says rump because I think my big head is blocking the T.
No, we did it right. We did it right. Yeah. So we made sure we got out the T. Got rid of the T. I think it was just fascinating to me because I'm so different in terms of that is such a little thing to me. Like, I mean, the fact that people are like, are you with Trump now? Like, are you kidding me? Like, there's a sticker behind me, and I'm taking
at a desk you don't own.
That I don't own, right. Like, literally, I don't have a desk here. So, hello, what are we talking about here, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that where we've gone? Like, I'm, you know what? I refuse to join Pettyville. It's here. Yeah. I know it runs things for people. Right. I am not the guy who's like, I don't Photoshop pictures over and over and change this and... Man, I take the picture, swipe, and go, right? I move on.
Well,
I mean,
do you think we could maybe get Jacob to, I don't know, touch up the photo in some fashion? What could we maybe put just John Curley's face over the, all right. Yeah, he's working on it right now for us.
Yes.
So any of you out there who actually saw the picture and looked very closely and then were offended after you looked closely, We're operating on a fix right now.
We're working on it. We're doing all we can to make sure,
make sure that
no
you are
one
happy
thinks we're not,
and not offended.
Stumping for Trump.
You know? All right. Now we can talk about that. We've got that off our chest.
Yes.
We could talk about Denny Heck. So an interesting story on the Hill about Denny Heck. Denny Heck is obviously Washington State congressman. He's been in office for 4 decades. He is one of the more influential congressmen of this generation in Washington. And he decided to retire. I mean, he's late 60s or mid-late 60s, decided he was kind of done with Congress. And then after he announced his retirement, Cyrus Habib decided that he did not want to be – he was leaving the lieutenant governor's seat for a religious order. Mm-hmm. And it opened up this wide-open seat at a fairly high level in government as lieutenant governor. And Denny Heck decided, yeah, maybe I'm not done with politics, and decided to jump back in. And the story talks about, like, well, why would he do this? But it doesn't really answer why he would do this. And I actually have my own theory as to why he would do this. So there's been some really interesting reports. And these are smaller stories about more of the Washington, D.C. culture stories. And I don't know why, but I find those stories really interesting because I do believe that culture does affect behavior and dramatically. And there's been a lot of discussion about how these people, and Denny Heck was one of these people, they literally... When they redrew the congressional district, the Republicans and the Democrats agreed, well, this is the Denny Heck district, because the Republicans liked working with him. They found like he was a guy who definitely would step across party lines and try and find compromise. He was known for that, even though he still stayed fairly credible with the Democrats. And I suspect that he's retiring. And this is based on precisely zero conversations with Denny Heck. I want to make that clear. But I suspect that he's retiring for a reason. A lot of other people, Jim Boehner, other more famous congressmen have stepped away. It's because how toxic the atmosphere is there, right? Yeah. Like, it's very difficult. Those old things where you'd go out, you'd have dinner with somebody, you'd find some sort of compromise that neither you were happy with, but both of you were willing to live with.
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff that used to happen. That was Denny Heck's, like, tool in his toolbox all the time, and he lost that. So now...
He's 68 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a reason. If you're used to something where you felt like you can get a lot done and all of a sudden I can get nothing done, yeah, that would be a reason to leave.
Yeah. All right. So coming up in the next hour, KNKX actually takes Cliff Mass, the meteorologist, off the air when he makes an unfortunate comparison to a major tragic event in history and compared it to the coronavirus. More on that in just right after the break.